Welcome to Safety Sisters, the podcast about the people who keep you safe at events and beyond. This is my first ever Safety Sisters solo episode today, and it's an honest share about my intention on improving the industry, what I truly value, the systems that help me, decision-making, incompetence, developing awareness, behavior in the event control room, fear of rejection and being too hard on ourselves, and what happens when we trust ourselves. I hope you enjoy.
Hello. Trying out something new. Dual podcast and video. Because why not? So there's a lot going on in my head about how I can be of service and at the same time be able to take care of myself as well. And that the opportunities that I've had over the last couple of years have allowed me to connect with amazing people and really learn how to speak, how to host, how to hold space for people, and the questions to ask that really allows them to be able to share what they want to share. And I've been grateful for that training, and it also brought up something in me that kind of alerted me to the fact that I really enjoy this, and that's why I have the Safety Sisters podcast. I love sharing other people's stories and showcasing other people's stories and giving them that space to be able to share their experience and what their passions are and what their challenges are. Because I believe that storytelling and sharing our own experiences is actually what causes change. I had this naive perception that I could make change and fix things. And I guess that's something we all, maybe some of us go through, and then, you know, others are actually probably more intelligent and just take care of themselves. But this realization that every solution that we come up with causes another problem or creates another path for someone to circumvent if they don't want to behave in accordance to whatever the rule that we're trying to create. And as I can't remember who said it, but I'm going to have to find out. My father always says this, that, and it quoted another person, that the major cause of problems are solutions. And that has been seeping into my consciousness over the past few years. And I've been able to have long conversations with some really interesting people. And one particularly recently, a few times, where this person would share their, we would talk about, you know, a potential solution. And let's say, for example, you know, when I did my master's dissertation and I was looking at the impact of legislation on crowd safety, and I saw that enforced regulation prevented major disasters. Need to be careful there. I noticed a correlation, or maybe I noticed a pattern. I need to be really careful now with my academic words. But basically, once enforced regulation came in, disasters stopped happening. So what is, there's a relationship. That's the word I was looking for. There's a relationship. So here was, you know, my little young, naive perception of, the law and regulation will solve all problems. And realizing, you know, once you start picking that apart, and especially with this conversation with this person, that when you put something in place, it will have a knock-on effect and cause damage to something else that maybe we can't see. when we're putting that in place. So we might have really good intentions, but it will just cause a problem somewhere else. And those who will want to circumnavigate will find a way to circumnavigate. So I get overwhelmed by all the issues in safety at events and event-related industries, and how I've come to realize that I can't fix it. I can't kind of make the changes that I thought I could make, because every single change that we make will have a knock-on effect. And as this person always says, and the law of unintended consequence, and it's caused me to go back over, sort of withdraw, which is what I've been doing, withdraw from everything. A, because I kind of realized I was giving all of myself away without that balance of financial care for myself, and with good intentions that I want to make a difference, but actually realizing that by not valuing my work meant that I then wasn't going to get paid because I wasn't valuing it, causing this sort of feedback loop. So, and also, you know, in relationship to that, or correlation to that, the realization that I don't think I can make change, and that maybe I'll never be able to make change, and all that I can do is do what's right in front of me, do what is right for me, and that is in front of me, and take the next step, because actually all I can do is take the next step and do what is important for my health and my body. And the all of the work that I've done in my life in terms of crowd psychology, studying crowds, studying psychology, just my own personal interest, coming from a background of Buddhism and Native American teachings, and learning from these different spiritualities, and coming across so many different systems like Myers-Briggs and all these kind of ones that kind of show you where your kind of skill set is, and understanding what skill set is, and then learning how we work as human beings and how our energy works, and systems like human design, which really has helped me understand how I operate, and actually what is healthy for me to do in this world. And with everything that I've studied, you know, even down to neuroscience, and a great book that I recently read that I will warn everyone, it can trigger depression, which is Robert Sapolsky's latest book called Determined, The Science of No Free Will. And that really was an eye-opener in terms of, we think we are in control and we absolutely are not. And how that understanding of our DNA, our hormones, how hungry we are, the environment that we're in, how healthy our parents were when we were in utero, the environment that we were when we were growing up, all impacts the decisions that we think we make or that are made for us. Decisions that are made in our system before our mind is even aware that we've made the system, that it made the decision, and how that can actually help us in the events world and in safety, because we're always making decisions and we're always making split second decisions, and decisions that can have serious impact on the lives of hundreds or thousands of people. So all of the kind of studying that I've done, and just how I am, just who I am, and how I've kind of kept all these split up, including like training as a Pilates teacher, and how I kept that separate from my event work, and that actually, hold on a second, why am I separating all of these studies and interests when I can bring them together and be more helpful to my friends and colleagues in the events industry. Because the reason that I was interested in all this work was because I was falling apart. I was burning out. I couldn't keep up with the system that we currently work in the events industry. And I can't continue like I used to. And what I've learned, going back to what I said, what I've learned from all of these systems, spiritual, I don't know what you want to call them, is that the mind is not in charge. We are not in control. The body is the only thing that is present in the now. The mind is in the future and in the past. So all of this work of mindfulness and being present and, you know, all of these different meditation, whatever you want to call it. Essentially, the body is the only thing that exists in the present. The breath is the only thing we can control that can bring us back into the present. And we have been relying on the mind, or the if you want to call it the ego, in is it transactional now? No, the other one. Never mind. I digress. So I've been relying on my mind to make decisions, to understand what's going on, to try and make life better. And actually, the mind hasn't a clue. It's a processing center, and I've been putting way too much pressure on it to be my life guide, when actually it's pretty much a computer. So what I'm learning in Pilates and, you know, meditate, like all this work, is that the body knows what is correct for us. The body knows what is right. And all of these signs that I'd been ignoring over the years, when I was disrespected or in a place that I felt unsafe, and because I felt like I had to pander to someone or make them happy, like a boss or whatever, that I would override the screaming of my body, shouting at me, going, this is not safe, this is not okay, your boundaries have just been crossed. And the more I would override it, the kind of more disconnected I became from my body. And then I would get sick and I would burn out and I would, my body would stop working, functioning properly. And then I would go, what's wrong with me? Why is this happening? And one of my favorite sayings is, what the mind suppresses, the body expresses. So what we are refusing to deal with or face in terms of habits and patterns, it will eventually come out in the body, because it's the only thing that exists in the present, and it is what we are in this life. So what I have been learning is to let go of what the mind is, you know, you should do this and you should do that, and guilt and judgment and all of these things that just make my life really unhappy and make me miserable, you know, when we don't have a very long life. We don't have long on this earth. And instead of enjoying and being present in every moment, we spend all of it being upset or angry or worried or stressed about something in the past or something in the future. And when, you know, of course it's important to have plans, you know, if you make a plan to go on a holiday, we'll need to book the flights, you need to schedule the time. But like that other lovely saying, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. And so it's fine to lay the plans down, sow the seeds, but then when it doesn't, you know, just then let it go and not try and grip onto it to make it happen. And actually, once you sow a seed, you can't make anything happen. You need to wait and then be guided as to what the next step is to take. And what that's done this sort of letting go of what I think I need to do and instead listening to my body of what my body says to do is turning down work that I thought I needed to do. And that has been really scary because financially, you know, this kind of not knowing where your income's going to come in. Yet, and that's the one of the main things that the mind grips onto because it, you know, it's like, I can control you because I use fear. And I'm still alive. I've had a full year of sort of living this way, and I've always been able to pay my rent magically. The money always comes in at the right moment, at the right time. And now I'm really kind of upping the game, so to say, of really listening in to what doesn't feel right and then taking action on that. And that was the trigger for writing that newsletter and LinkedIn post saying that I need to now be discerning and actually not just say yes and questioning why I'm saying yes. Am I saying yes to something because I am able to give from an overflowing cup? Or am I saying yes because I don't feel good enough and that I will only be good enough if I dedicate my time and effort to these organizations or these people or this work? Will I be good enough when I do this? And I really saw that in the qualifications that I would take. I never felt competent. I still don't feel competent. And I thought, okay, I'll do my, I had my undergrad degree and didn't feel competent. And then years later, I did my level 4 safety officer training. Still didn't feel competent after that, even though I thought I would. And then I thought then I fell into the master's in crowd safety. And I thought, once I get this master's, I will be competent. And lo and behold, I graduated at the top of my class, got the best mark, worked so hard on the dissertation, really proud of it, had really great support, was a really challenging but great experience. And I went through the experience, came out the other end, and didn't feel competent. I feel exactly the same as I felt before. So what that was teaching me is the intention, and this is where the Buddhism comes in, is it's not what you do, it's the intention of why you're doing it. And my intention, instead of like doing it because I enjoyed it, of course I did enjoy it, but there clearly was some intention that I probably wasn't conscious of that said, you're not good enough, and once you get this qualification, you will be good enough. And that's the joke. I just lied to you. Come on, let's find the next course. And I did. I still do feel, now I'm looking at a PhD and it's like, will you be competent when you are a Dr. Murphy Morris? Probably not. So it's looking at my intention of why I want to do a PhD. Because I love studying and love learning and love sharing that learning with the world. And letting go, just like the plan of I intend to do a PhD or I intend to do further study, and if it happens, it happens, if it doesn't, it doesn't, and that is fine. And also trusting that what's for you won't pass you. And you know, if we go back to Robert Sapolsky's book, it's not like we're in control anyway. Things are going to happen as they're going to happen. And I really now experience that the only thing I can rely on is my body. Once again, it is the only thing that exists in the present. The breath is the only thing that can bring me back to the present. And when my mind is freaking out, I use breath, use movement, Pilates or dance to come back into the present moment. And one of the a really helpful tool as well that I have learned from Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, and also Pema Chodron, who's an incredible Buddhist teacher, about the attaching. Oh, and Brené Brown. She's also been talking about it, attaching a storyline to the emotions. And I love how Brené says, the story I'm telling myself is, and that when I'm nervous or upset or whatever, that I start doing deep breaths to come back into the present moment. But then also, if I'm feeling low, I'm just feeling low. And it is something that is passing through and it will go. And that the problem, in my inverted commas, comes in when my mind or I attach a storyline to the feeling. I am feeling low because there's no need to attach a storyline. I am feeling low. And the more I can detach and just sort of become an observer and watch the emotions and do something gentle with myself and take care and not put myself in antagonistic situations, then it will pass without me going in and, you know, making more of a mess and causing unnecessary suffering for myself. So I realize that I'm kind of going all over the place and digressing, but you know what? I can do that. And yeah, kind of this other realization that I'm still doing things for people, for someone, for there's still a little string there of like, you want approval or you want to do this right for someone. And even just now going, oh, you need to stay on track and stay on topic. And actually, if I want to ramble on, I can. Nobody has to listen. I'm not making anyone listen. I'm not making anyone watch this. That I really don't have to prove myself to anyone. And I think this is a universal thing. I'm a woman, so I can only speak from my perspective as a woman, that I really feel that there's a lot that we kind of put on ourselves to seek that approval and seek that validation that we've done well and we've done right. And that is a really deep, deep habit. And just goes to show that the more aware we become, the more aware we become. And that we don't know how big that iceberg is under the water of how many unconscious patterns are driving us. The work of Eric Byrne in transactional analysis of the parent, adult and child, and the adaptive child and the, is it playful child? So the kind of the child energy that is let's say healthy and then an unhealthy child behavior, and then the nurturing parent and the critical parent. So the healthy parent role and the unhealthy parent role. And then the adult is the sort of balanced, how would you say, maybe in command, as the Native American teachings are, in command position. And how every time we're relating to people, you know, are we relating them adult to adult? Are we relating to them, you know, critical parent to adaptive child? Like, you know, how, as I'm saying this, I'm actually thinking of an event control room and how we liaise with all these different people in a control room, and we actually don't know who these people are, or we do know who these people are. And how much of ourselves, how much are we aware of how we are when we are in an event control room? And that we have so much pressure to communicate well, to communicate with brevity, clarity, and to make decisions that impact the safety of thousands of people. And how are we in those moments? Are we tired? Have we had sleep? There's some great research going on now about the impact of sleep on our decision making. Are we hungry? And this goes back to Robert Sapolsky's work of like, what's our DNA? What's switched on in our DNA? What's switched off? How developed is our prefrontal cortex? How big is our amygdala? You know, are we primed to go straight into, you know, how many testosterone receptors are we? Like, are we more primed to be angry? Do we, are we basically primed to react to people? Are we able to respond? Are we coming from a place of centeredness? Are we making decisions for the best of everyone? Are we making decisions because of our fears? And I know that how my body works is I can get really overwhelmed by a lot of people in a small room, and all of our electromagnetic fields are impacting each other. The research by the HeartMath Institute demonstrates the power of the electromagnetic field around our heart and how that impacts other people. And we know, we can tell when we're with other people about how they feel, or, you know, when someone's angry or when someone's happy, and how we're influenced by other people around us. And I notice that how I behave changes when I'm with people and when I'm not around people. And am I still able to stay grounded and centered and not lose my head or lose my decision making when there's a crisis that we need to respond to? Am I asking the right questions? And am I speaking with clarity? Am I speaking in a way that the other person allows them to get the information that they need? You know, because we all speak and listen differently. We have different experiences, different, training. We need to receive information in a certain way that we can process it fast. Have we built those relationships with the people in the control room of how do you want to be spoken to? How do you want to receive information that we can support each other in making fast decisions? So the work that I want to continue doing is A, bringing all of me to the table and going, I've done a lot of studying and work and practice in my own life that I have been afraid to bring forward until now, because I have been afraid of rejection. I've been afraid of rejection, been afraid of being cancelled, afraid of being judged. And it's still a process. And, you know, in like a year from now or 5 years from now, I'll look back on Issei today going, she didn't know anything. I don't know what I don't know. But what I do know is that I have been living a life that I thought I was in control of, but was driven completely by fear and by other people's expectations, or what I thought are other people's expectations, and driven by the want and desire for their approval and validation. And, you know, back to the transactional analysis or back to sort of, yeah, psychology is, to me, that's one of the really normal things. I mean, how many of us are actually, are we aware of it? But if we think about us as adults now, and once again, is transactional analysis, I'm okay, you're okay. And so as I'm okay, you're okay is the adult to adult. I'm not okay, you're okay. It could be like the child to the parent. And that is, there's a reason for that, because when you're a child, you cannot take care of yourself. Your parents or your caregivers take care of you. So therefore, I'm not okay, you're okay is the transactional analysis studying. So therefore, you are right and I need to imitate you, copy you, but I need to placate you because I need you to keep me safe. So I need to keep you happy so you keep me safe. And the issue is we continue that into our adult lives, and we see our bosses, like, how afraid are we of our bosses, as if they were our parents? And another, and this is what I talked about at the start of my podcast that's on my website, talking about all these kind of themes. is what we learn as children to survive, we must unlearn as adults to thrive. And this is what I love about the human design work and the Native American teachings, is all about stepping into your own authority, stepping into your command. You are the captain of your ship. You don't have control over the ship, but that's a story for another day. But you are still, you know, you do not need approval from anyone. And these patterns are so deep that maybe we are aware, maybe we're not aware, but it is so ingrained in us. And once again, for another good reason, stick your head over the parapet, you die. Stand out from the crowd, you get rejected. Back to Robert Sapolsky's work in on his other book called Behave. Our hormones are like, we are actually designed to see people who look like us as non-threatening, and to see people who don't look or behave like us as threatening. So we have these sort of primitive tribal instincts that then our prefrontal cortex will override and go, no, that's, you don't need to be afraid. That's not correct behavior. So it's being aware of this automatic systems of that kind of tribal, and, you know, if we see, it's like if we see a lion that doesn't look like us and doesn't behave like us, and oh, we might die. But also, you know, anything that kind of makes us a little bit different from the status quo of society is really scary, because, you know, anyone who has done something different, they were vilified, they were rejected, gosh, they were burned at the stake, they were murdered, they were arrested. So, you know, it is scary to kind of go, hi, I'm, we're all individuals. I'm not. So what I'm saying is we are collectively having a really challenging time. And we deserve to live an authentic life that actually allows us some joy and happiness, because we are suffering way too much. And I'm feeling a little bit emotional because I feel really privileged that I've been able to kind of step out and go, I'm not playing ball anymore. And even though it's been really challenging for me, because I haven't really had all the kind of, you know, the book of life, you know, don't own a house, probably never will, unless something magically happens. And don't have any of these kind of systems that we would assume that I would be part of as a 34, 35 year old. Yet I feel really lucky that I'm able to live a life authentically to me, and live in a way that my body feels comfortable and safe and happy. And yes, when I say I mean, you know, there's still many emotional and many emotions, but all in all, I don't want to ever put myself back into that grind that I pushed myself so hard for so many years. And I see this everyone else, I see it everywhere, and it breaks my heart, because there are amazing people that I have been so privileged to work with closely over the past couple of years. And they have amazing hearts and amazing intentions, and they're really struggling, and everyone's really struggling. I know everybody is struggling, and everyone is really, really hard on themselves. And all I want for everyone is to be a little bit kinder to themselves. And I believe that when you're a bit kinder to yourself, we're naturally kinder to other people. And to, like, all we have in this life is ourselves, really. You know, you can't be in another person's body, you can only be in your own body. And that, you know, we deserve to feel good in ourselves, we deserve to live a life that is authentically us, and we deserve to have some joy in our lives. And the only way that I've been able to do that is by listening to my body. And when she says no, it's no. And even though it flies in the in the conventional face of, you know, the mind is going, but it's money, say yes. And it's like, it doesn't feel good, I'm saying no. And every time that I say no to something that feels, doesn't feel right to me, I turn around and boom, something comes in and it exactly aligns with my values and it lights me up and it, and I'm connecting with really great people and then, you know, delivering a really lovely event or teaching a client Pilates or mentoring, you know, young people in the industry. Like, opportunities have come in that I didn't even know were opportunities. And to, I love my quotes, nature abhors a vacuum. Once I created that space, it was immediately filled by something that actually was right for me, because finally I was valuing myself. I was listening to my body. I was valuing who I am. I was respecting myself. And once I was respecting myself, that can only be mirrored out in the world. So it's a really scary thing to do, but it's never, you know, I would have abandoned it long ago if it didn't work. And I just feel like the more aware I am, the more aware I am, and the stronger relationship I have with my body, and then being guided by what my body says, this is right, this isn't, and the timing, and knowing that if something doesn't feel right to do right now, that doesn't mean, you know, it just means the timing is off. And when the timing is right, it means that everything falls into place, because I move my chess piece, then you move yours, and someone moves theirs in the Amazon, and that actually impacts us. Because, you know, if you go into the quantum mechanics of it all, there is no space. Space is a thing. And actually, it's kind of like a, the way it was described, Carlo Rovelli, please tell me I've said that right. I love his scientist in quantum mechanics, and he wrote a little great little book about time, and actually, because time doesn't exist. And how, if you think about making like a bunch of bubbles, you know, as in, you know, using washing up liquid and blowing bubbles, and how when you see all the lines and the connectors, and actually that's actually what space is. So there is no gap between us and the moon. There is no gap between us and the next person. There is matter. There is matter. And so what we do matters, and what we do impacts other people and impacts ourselves. And what I have learned is that when a decision is made from my body, it has ultimately been right for, I don't know how to say it. It has ultimately been like, it has been the correct thing. And then that impacts and positively impacts and makes the changes that might need to impact other people. And my body has never steered me wrong. And that I really, really understand that my mind is a tool to be used and not actually to be relied on as a decision maker. And the more we can listen to our body, the more we come home to ourselves. And it is like when I feel really upset or feel lost, and I do the breathing work and I do the movement work, and I finally kind of land in my body, that what I was searching for is what that feeling is. And it's that feeling of total safety, total trust, that everything is okay, everything will be okay. And that I am safe and at home in my body. And that is a feeling that I had been searching for, and it was here all along. So I want to use what I have learned in my life to help others. I want to use the awareness and understanding, the Pilates, the movement work, all of it, to help people who work in events, because I work in events, and that ultimately, I feel like the more we can take care of ourselves, the better we can take care of our crowds. And the more amazing our events will be, and the safer our events will be. And I don't think any legislation needs to change for that.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and follow the show and leave a review if you like. For more information on my work in crowd safety, research-led articles and other resources, see murphymorris.co.